Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. Even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Bye.
All right, it's time for another installment. We got a new year, new decade. We're in 2020, and today, well, this is the Charles Tyler Show 2020. This is V, and Charles Tyler is here with us in spirit, but his mentor, the one I heard about all the time, and the one that most of everybody that used to listen to Charles on a regular basis, would be John Thompson. And Mr. Thompson, good evening.
Good evening. How are you there, my brother?
Fine, fine. Well, since this is the Charles Tyler Show, tell us how you first came in contact, or I guess he came in contact with you. How did that whole relationship happen?
Well, Charles Tyler, he called me, I think it was around 2014, 2015, and he said he heard about me, and then we had some great conversations and everything, and he asked me about doing some parties and what have you, beach parties and everything. I said, yeah, well, I've been doing it ever since 1987, so hey, I'm ready. So we first did our first party, and then he joined me in celebrating the Black Holiday, which is November the 20th, the day of Zumbi. Black Consciousness Day, the month of November in Rio de Janeiro. And that's how it began, and it just snowballed from there until his passing was made. Very, very sad, very sad.
Yes. How long have you been down in Brazil? Because you're in Brazil right now.
I'm in Brazil right now, yes. I've been coming to Rio since 1985.
Oh, let's go. What put Brazil on your radar? Because I understand you were working in New York as a law enforcement officer, correct?
Yes, until I retired in 1990.
Okay. So how did Brazil get on your radar as a place to visit at first?
Well, I was hanging out in Jamaica and Montego Bay and Bay Street down in the Bahamas and Freeport and Nassau. And I just wanted a change, you know. And there's certain things that, you know, I didn't like what was going on when I was visiting those countries. And it felt like sometime when you're at the airport, it looked like they ignore you when you're of color and everybody running to everybody else. And I just got a little sick of that or whatever. Then I came to Rio. They treat everybody. If they treat you wrong, they treat everybody wrong. I said, hey, this is the place for me. And then I came for Carnival 1985 and still working. So after Carnival 85, I was back 6 months later in 85, 6 months later in 85. And every time I got a break, I was in Brazil. Then they had courier service going on there. You know, you give up your day or will hire you as a courier and you only pay about $100 to come down. Just as long as they use your space on the plane to ship the cargo. So I started dealing with the courier service, and heck, I was down here two or three times a year from 85 until I retired in 90.
All right.
Now, I opened up a business here in 90, a travel agency in 90.
Okay. All right. Well, Brazil's been obviously very good to you. but now, before we leave, because like I said, it's the Charles Tyler Show. Now, can you offer any travel health tips that people need to, you know, apply to their lives before going on these long haul trips?
Oh yeah, yes I can. As a matter of fact, I work with a Brazilian company, and I've been renting apartments, hotels, and everything since 1987. So this is part of my profession when it comes to traveling to Brazil. So that's what I profess. That's my profession. That's my expertise, traveling to Rio. Especially Rio, but traveling anywhere in Brazil, you know.
Now,
and in addition, I want to tell you, we have a charity organization that we started some years ago. A group of us started a charity organization where we work with the kids in the favelas also.
All right. Now, for physical condition, what do you suggest that people, because a lot of people have a sedentary lifestyle, then they might go to some place like Brazil or any place. They take a long haul trip. Well, that flight's about, 12 hours?
Depending on where you're coming from. Most of it's been generally about 9.5 hours.
Okay.
If you're in Florida, it's a little less.
Well, that 8-9 hours, that's a day. Okay. So it's a long haul trip. And a lot of people, now what would you recommend people, should they be in some type of decent physical condition before they travel on a long haul trip? And then what should they do health wise? Because a lot of people, they go from a sedentary lifestyle and they try to cram it all in within a week or two. And sometimes things just, their body doesn't react to that. So, I mean, any health tips on what a person can do to stay in good shape at least?
Well, I can tell you what I do, because I'm back and forth in the United States 2 or 3 times a year,
uh-huh.
sometimes 4 times a year, okay, for the last 34 years, it'll be 35 years coming up. This will be my 35th carnival consecutive. What I usually do, get up and stretch during the night, you know, on the flight. I'll get up, go back and forth, and stretch. Go to the bathroom, stretch, or go in front of the bathroom, and I do a little stretch. You try not to eat too much. You drink a lot of water. You need to drink a lot of water, anyway. So, and, you know, but I go to the gym about 5 times a week anyway. So I would say people, you know, the best thing to do is get your body together, you know, as much as you can.
Okay, yeah, you're right on the hydration part. And the reason why I asked that question, even before Charles' passing, I understand it was probably maybe 2 or 3 more people that came from up here that passed away down there. So I'm looking at, I'm not a medical professional, but like I say, before you take those long-haul trips, you need to try to be in some type of decent physical condition. Now, moving on to the travel part, particularly Brazil-specific, I understand now, at least coming from the United States, you no longer need a visa. So what's the update on that?
Yeah, that's correct. You don't need a visa to travel to Brazil. They give you a certain period of time that you can remain in Brazil without a visa. And I think one rule, you have to, after X amount of days, you have to go to the consulate or something like that and get an extension, you know. But basically, if you're not planning to be a resident of Brazil, then you're required to leave. I think give you about, I think about 90 days. I'm not, that part I need to check on. But the consulate, Brazilian consulate will give you all the information you need on that. And they have a special thing for student visas and business extension when it comes to business visas too. So they're very flexible.
Okay. For a person who's never traveled to Brazil, any recommendations on where to stay, affordable accommodations, what city, should they go to Rio, should they go to São Paulo, basically just like that, any networks that, I guess, of expats that they can tap into?
Yeah, well, Rio, well, you know, I'm a little biased. I'm here in Rio all the time, so I just recommend Rio. And when you're traveling to Brazil, I can help with that travel. And then some of your airlines are giving discounts. You got to keep track of depending on when you travel. You got to just look and see. And at times, I can offer something better. I try to beat some of the prices they give. The hotels, apartments. I prefer apartments. A lot of my friends come down. They like to rent an apartment because they're more guest friendly, what have you. So those are things you look at. Salvador Bahia is a great city to visit too, especially when you come to the diaspora and learning how the slavery began. But we also have a history of slavery here in Rio. Then we take people around to show them where the slaves came in and how the culture. We got a strong black movement here in Rio and some of the townships here now.
Okay. What about Dollar amount, because that's a question that a lot of people ask. How much should people bring with them?
Well, that depends on how long you're staying. The dollar strong now is to one real is 4.15. It fluctuates. And you make sure you bring enough for your tools. Your tools will probably run you, look at about 50 to 65 U.S. per tool. The all-day tools somewhere running at ballpark. Some of the tools are much less, 30, 40. You know, and so you bring enough money to carry you, maybe, you know, do your tools. I would say about maybe about $1,000, a little more. And you always got your credit card if you want to pull some more money out. Traveling, too. Also, you don't leave all your expensive jewelry and all those things at home. You know, I haven't worn rings or any jewelry in the last 30 years. And, you know, so, you know, you got to be conscious that, you know, you have a lot of poverty here in Rio. So, in Brazil, so you be careful, you know. And another thing I would encourage them to, when you see people homeless, to give to them. That's one thing I do all day long, man. They probably wait for me to come because I always give to somebody.
Okay. One topic that Charles brought up occasionally, and I guess people who've actually been to Brazil are familiar with it, favelas. What are the favelas?
Well, the favelas, you know, it's a long history on the favelas. The favelas started, it means slums, and they started many, many years ago, basically because when Rio and some of the most of the city was booming at some point in time, and, you know, with trade and everything and commerce, and the workers, the poor people from suburbs, what have you, wanted to come to the city to work and live. And of course, they couldn't afford the stay in the cities and everything. But first favelas began after slavery, when slavery was abolished. Before and then after slavery in 1880, after Princess Isabel, a lot of the they couldn't. If you can't stay here in the city, you had to live somewhere. So they went to the mountainsides and what have, became squatters and everything. And that's how the favelas grew from squatters and everything. They would live in the favelas in the slums, and they would come to the city and work. They had a war called the Canudos War in 1889 thereafter, with a group of people mixed that didn't like the control of the monarch, and they were called the Canudos. Okay, this what built the favelas in Rio de Janeiro. And after the monarch left, the new government went after the Canudos, killed about 85,000 people. This is something Brazil don't talk about. Well, after the war was over, it had about 87,000 troops came to Rio de Janeiro. They couldn't stay here because they didn't have enough money. And that's how the favela grew, with all the different mixture and the blends of the favela as it is today.
Okay. Let's see. Oh, another topic. In the early days of the Charles Tyler Show, and matter of fact, not only the early days, but it, I guess all through it, particularly dating. Any suggestions that you can give on how men should basically navigate themselves through the social scene in Brazil, I'll put it that way.
Well, the social scene is, well, you know, it's a beautiful social scene. You know, you have a lot of good people here, a lot of lovely young ladies, a lot of people good, man. You just have to pick and choose and use common sense on your relationships and what have you. And I don't think you should have any problems there. You carry yourself as a decent person, and you're perceived that way. So that's not a problem and everything. You respect and you get respect. That's the way I look at it.
Right. Right. Well, I understand quite a few people of African American men, well, not only them, but have moved down to Brazil, got into relationships in Brazil, got married to some of the locals, and a few have even learned the language. So any thoughts on picking up the language?
Well, that's one thing that paramount, that you should attend a school or what have you and study on the internet or something, but you definitely need to know that in order to navigate and to understand the culture and everything. And while you're down here living, you visit other areas, other townships, and just, you know, learn more about the country itself. That's what I did, and eventually I met people in the black movement. I was even the governor escort in New York. When she went to New York years ago, she was vice governor then she became governor. And that was some of my relationships, just meeting people in the black movement here. And I demonstrated with them for a black holiday that we now have. So you blend. You don't isolate yourself. You try to get to know people and to understand the culture, and you learn as much as you can of the language.
Right, right. I've known some people now, I guess, because when you first went down there, I guess the best way to pick it up is just to be around the locals. But now they've got websites where, you know, you can put an app on your phone, help you learn that way, or you can get language partners that, you know, somebody in Brazil might want to learn English, and you partner up so you teach them English, help them with their English, and vice versa.
That's true, but also the classes are not that expensive. You can enroll in a Portuguese class here, but they're not that expensive. And because basically the classes are better because, or you have a professor on the side or something like that, because you learn all your verbs and the pronouns and what have you. Those things are so important that, you know. So you team up with somebody, like you say, you trade off to with a person you meet, but I would recommend the classes.
Okay.
And they're not expensive.
Okay. That's worth it because, like I said, now from what I understand, I haven't been down there as of yet, but I understand a lot of the locals don't speak English. So it'll be a big advantage if you learn some of the local language Brazilian Portuguese.
That's imperative. That's imperative. Right. Very important. And not only that, when you start dealing with Brazilians who don't speak language too, that's important because you trade off in that respect, you know.
Right.
And there's so much to learn in the language about, you know. Especially when you're dealing with apartments, rentals, and all that, you have to learn about the tools, paint, and then everything.
Right.
So,
Now, for social, let's say for a person that all right, this is a new year. We're in the second month. One of their New Year's resolutions or goals was, you know what, I want to travel to Brazil. Could you lay a simple step by step plan on what they should do first, you know, as far as booking their ticket? They do not need a visa now, in a place where they can stay. And then one of the things I heard from Charles and then some others is that somebody like yourself would even meet them at the airport. So could you lay out something that a person can grab onto so they can actually...
Yeah, well, most of your hotels and offer that service. Of course, I offer that service. As a matter of fact, I got to call my driver tonight. I got coming in tomorrow morning. But I offer that service, and that's the best way because when you're at the airport, you got all the hustlers there and trying to, you know, get you to exchange money, whatever. You want to got to be careful. So it's best to have someone waiting for you at the airport, especially your first time in Rio. When I sometimes I can't find a driver, I'll jump on the get a cab or something and meet him myself. But that's very, very important. And because you got to use your street smarts from the state and realize, you know, you got these hustlers at the airport.
Okay. Yeah, I just checked my current. Matter of fact, for people listening, typically on your phone, you can get a currency converter, which those are typically free. And you're right, the dollar not doing bad down there in Brazil right now. So.
Oh, the dollar is real. This is the best time to buy down here, man. This is ideal. First, we want to get into real estate, and like I say, they got this real fear that they put in people about Brazil, and here I'm here for about 30 some years back and forth, never had a problem. Okay, and found nothing but much love. So this I don't want to live. I don't want to live anywhere else but Brazil.
Oh, okay. Well, not only you. I mean, Charles raved so much about Brazil. I thought he was almost employed by the government as an ambassador. He really loved it down that way.
Oh, he loved it, and I can understand that because that's the way that people treat you. You have to love the way that people treat you. You have to love it. You know, wherever you go, you know, they, hey, let's come and eat, come and have something, you know, da da da. And not only that, some of the well-to-do, some of my best friends as well, do, you know, have a lot of money, and they treat you just like you, just like member of the family, you know. My best friend is an inspector. He's on Facebook. Silas Rahal, my best friend. He's an inspector. I met him when he was an officer. He's an inspector now. We've been friends for 30 years. His mother, who's 90-something, was my doctor years ago. She's 90-something years old. Her father was my lawyer. He passed away. And we're like family. Everybody, when someone expired, at the funeral, you know, we're like family.
Hmm.
And that's the way Brazilians treat you all over the country, like family.
Hmm. You know, I got a feeling some people have come down, have traveled to Brazil and say, you know what, I'm not going back. You heard any stories like that?
Well, those people probably caused a problem themselves. They caused a problem. You know, how can I speak? I've been here for so long, and I walk out the street, the homeless know me, the bums know me, some of the thugs, I probably watched them grow up, and I never have a problem.
Mm. No,
so,
what I meant was...
Some people cause problems. They cause their own problem. Their problem in the United States to bring it to Brazil.
I mean, Mr. Thompson, some people have... I'm just speculating because I don't know. That they've gone down to Brazil, had such a good time in Brazil, and the culture embraced them in a positive way in Brazil, that they loved it so much that they said, you know what, I don't want to go back. I'm going to stay in Brazil. That's...
One of the doctors called me down there right now. He's a retired doctor, right? He called me tonight. He said, John, and he's a permanent resident. He said, John, I just love this place. One of the captains from Alaska Air, same thing. Captain from Delta Island, same thing. They love it, man. And some, if they don't have a good time or something like that, they have a problem, not Brazil.
Yeah, I've even occasionally on with Charles' show, and even after that, I've heard of people, you know, on just – They claim that they were about to cry or did cry because they had to leave.
Now that I can understand.
But
we have the largest black population, second to Nigeria.
Okay. Yeah, in
you understand?
World. Yeah. In the world.
Second largest. Now what I did, I made a relationship. In the black movement there.
Uh-huh.
That was in the 80s when I marched along with them for the black holiday. So some of them, matter of fact, I was coming to New York and two of those involved who are PhD candidates were going to the Martin Luther King event in Atlanta. We was on the same flight.
Okay.
And they knew more about it than I knew about it. I did meet Martin Luther King sister-in-law and Nelson Mandela, second wife, at the black college in Sao Paulo. In Sao Paulo, we have a black college,
oh.
Zumo dos Palmares.
And that's a big city there. That's got, what, over 10 million people live in Sao Paulo?
Uh-huh.
A lot of people.
And they have one black college in the entire country, and it's in Sao Paulo. My buddy, Dr. Joe Vicente, is the president.
Let me ask you this. A ballpark figure for a round-trip ticket from, let's say, New York City to Sao Paulo.
I would say New York City to Sao Paulo. At times you can... Are you still there, buddy?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, at times you can catch a ticket at from 6 to 800 to 900, depending on the carnival, about 1100. But sometimes you can catch one at 6. Sometimes they got a new thing with airlines where it last-minute calls. And if you're looking to go to travel and you're flexible, they'll call you at the last minute. That thing, that I don't know about. What I do, if a person calls me, I ask them, see what you can get it for, and I see if I can beat it. And that's what I do.
Okay. All right. Well, now, for people that want to get in touch with you for any kind of guidance on getting to getting down there to Brazil, any way they can reach your website, phone number, what?
Yeah, well, we have got another website on being constructed now, but they can call me at the 646 number, 646-485-6055.
Okay.
Now,
special,
and then I have a...
Any special events that you want to promote?
Yes, well, we, in November, we're doing the Black Holiday in November, we're planning on honoring a few people from the United States, important people who've done some important things, one being Judge Randolph Jackson, wrote Black People the Bible, a brother that does a lot of work in Africa, a gentleman from Detroit who's saved a life in Detroit. And this is what we're trying to do, what we plan on doing in November, doing a Black celebration here, the Black Holiday.
Okay, great, great. Well, look, Mr. Thompson, thank you so much. I'm going to call you back during the week so we can set up more of these. I got people calling me at different parts.
Well, thank you.
we have people from the UK listening, so we want to include them in on the next podcast. And thank you for coming on. Happy New Year and Happy New Decade. And I look forward to meeting you myself when I visit Brazil.
Well, we're waiting on you.
All right, then. Everyone have a good night, good day, and good week.
Thank you, my brother.
Thanks,
good night. Bye-bye.
At Jiffy Lube, we car about cars. In fact, we're kind of obsessed. That's why we've been taking car off business with quick quality oil changes and service for over 40 years. And with things like our Carful Vehicle Review, where our experts check, fill, clean, and inspect your vehicle, you'll know we'll car for your car like we car for our own. Jiffy Lube. Car more.
Visit JiffyLubeDC.com to find a Jiffy Lube service center near you.